So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. Hey guys, Dr. Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and the guy I have on the other line, I don't think I need to introduce this guy. If you don't know who Dr. Kelly Starrett is, then you're living under a rock. You need to just stop this podcast right now, go get Becoming a Supple Leopard, and subscribe to Mobility Wad Pro, and teach yourself something, man, because you're missing out. So, Kelly, I really appreciate you jumping on the podcast with me. This is going to be a fun talk.
Oh, dude, my pleasure.
So, tell me about your recent rafting trip, because I know you guys just went out and did some crazy paddling, right? So where'd you go?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I think you and I were just having a conversation offline, and what I'll say is, it is when you own your own business and you are holding the umbrella for a lot of other people. Yeah. You know, I don't know how many other people make their living off of us. 27, something like that. 28,
a lot.
29. It's a lot. There's a lot of stress involved, and then these incredible. You work your butt off. I mean, remember when you had a dream of going to grad school and you like were shadowing at a PT clinic and you were working in the hospital to just get your hours and you're like, someday I'm gonna have a dream, and all of a sudden that dream is here and you've been working for it for a decade longer and. There's so much opportunity and you're finally not critically poor. I mean, like you're paying off your student loans, you've got this workflow. And then the thing happens where you're like, holy crap, I don't have fun anymore. And it's not that, I mean, Gene Sharrock abroad, and a lot of people bring this up. You know, when you are a physio who owns your own business, there's no off button. Like we work 24 hours a day. We're always on. We're talking to people, you know, and I don't feel like I ever need a weekend. I'm like, it's Friday, you know.
Yeah.
The work volume is always there and it's always interesting and I'm always in it. Like, you know, I don't mind talking to people about what's going on with them and, you know, and consulting. And we just get to do a lot of cool stuff. Comma, about 5 years ago when we were sort of at peak thrust on takeoff, we were just, you know, grinding. You know, we decided that we needed to recalculate and refocus our filter. And that filter was, what's the point of all this? What are we doing here? And the point was to get more time together as a family. So when we started running everything through that filter, we were able to say no to things. We were able to say yes to long-term development, but it really clarified why we were working so hard because we were consummating that loop. So there's intellectual curiosity, professional curiosity, all that's great. It all gets saturated. But you know, we've got to carve out time where we're not just, you know, on the wheel, as it were. And unfortunately, I have kids and they, you know, really, I think if Juliet and I didn't have kids, we would literally work 24 hours a day,
yeah.
You know? And, but because we have kids, we don't. And then to your point, we just went on, you know, Juliet and I were dirtbag river guides a long time ago. And, we're trying to get our kids to be dirtbag river guides. And so we just got off the salmon, you know, a 5-day self-support trip on the salmon, which was just fantastic. And this was actually the first time I've ever kayaked hard shell with Georgia the whole day. So she kayaked 4 days in a row, which is great.
Well, your daughters are badasses, man. It's super cool to see, you know, I mean, you and Juliet just like are really, it's good parents. You know, obviously it's your kids are good. You can tell a lot about a parent or a person based on how their kids act. You know, like in my opinion, like if your kid's a little shithead, there's something wrong with a parent. And that may sound harsh, but I think it's pretty accurate. And you know, like
it's hard to blame children, isn't it?
You know? It totally is, man. They're a reflection of you, you know. So you know, anyway, the for you guys, I mean, I really look at you and Juliet are the combination of you two. Ashley and I, my wife and I, we work together as well, and we really see what you guys value and the way that you structure your family and what you find important. I mean, that's really something that we're like, man, who do we want to model ourselves after? It's the Starretts, you know, for sure. Oh. And you know, it's interesting for you guys, because you bring this up and the idea that, if you're willing to do something on your own, you're willing to damn near kill yourself to make it work, right?
That's true.
So how do you guys, if somebody's in this right now, or they're looking to start a business, you know, you talk about this kind of one thing that's so important. How do you keep it coming back to that? Like, how do you check in to that and make sure that you're not getting, you know, lost and get stuck in this idea or this kind of concept of just grinding it out until you've reached whatever that goal, that mythical, you know, goal is.
Right, which never
happens, right?
It never materializes. Well, there's a couple things here. One is I think it's interesting when a lot of good physios now, I think, are realizing that, you know, the marketplace consciousness has shifted. I think, you know, think about how risky it was to maybe open your own physio clinic 15 years ago or 20 years ago. Yes. It's just different. The internet is not there. The sort of public awareness around fitness or mechanics, you know, there are always deep niches, but I think some of the, you know, there's a really thriving PT practice next to us here at the gym. And one of our MWOD staffers, Sean McBride, he's an OCS, you know, moonlights there, coaches for us, you know, kind of sees people in a traditional rehab model that takes insurance. And, you know, Chris Chorak, who's the owner there, is just – she was one of those people like Mark Verstegen, like Gray Cook, who held the door open for a lot of us, who said, hey, look, I'm going to set up an autonomous alternative to big, big traditional physio where we can really start to get into you know, more nuanced, hands-on, concierge-like care, right? Like, because when I moved here in 2000 and I was, you know – I knew about Chris Chorak in 2001, and she was lecturing and talking and really holding the community open and trying to serve a community that I think was underserved the way traditionally physical therapy was traditionally delivered. And now, you know, fast forward to 2017, and it looks like her model is a really old model. You know, yeah, you're like, sure. Oh, what are you still doing? Taking insurance? Oh my God. And, you know, and so I think, you know, with that in mind, that it's a lot easier now for physios to be able to have a radically different practice set. You can work in, you know, with teams and coaches. And I mean, there's just so many things you can do. But when you take it on, you know, come back to your point, is that, you know, the entrepreneurship, it is a family endeavor. And I think that's important because when you start this, you're going to need your family support when you are there on Sunday and late, and you know, and if you're starting a physio practice, you know, because you rightfully should, and the time is right to do that, you know, maybe be in the alternative model, you know, that this world has changed a little bit, you know, I just say make sure you've talked it over with your partner so that, you know, he or she knows what you're about to, you know, undertake, because it's not for everyone, you know, it's, you know, you have fixed costs and there are big bills and it's scary. And yes, sometimes when you're 10 years in and it looks all successful, it looks like it was a no brainer, you know, but I mean, even just the conversations you and I had when you were still active duty military doing incredible work with the Army, you know, you were like, I had to kind of pull you off the ledge a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, come on, come with me. You know, no, it's better over here. And what I'll say is, with that idea that it is scary, is that you're going to need the support of your partner. And in this situation, I think you and I are unique, is that my business partner is my wife. And Juliet and I have radically different, you know, tasks, radically different kind of scope of responsibilities. And she is the CEO. And unfortunately, I think one of the things that I saw recently you had on a post, which I appreciated, was said, hey, look, you know, you may be brilliant at connecting with people and a brilliant physio and a brilliant coach, but you're crap at business and you have no training in that. That is not part of my PT education. I mean, I had to make a business plan, you know, and do all of that, but that's not the same thing as running a business and figuring out how to set up, you know, recurrent payment and software and insurance. And I think what's nice for me is that Juliet is the consummate CEO, which allows me to do what I'm good at. And she happens to not just be a good CEO, but she really likes it and thrives there. So one, it's always going to be a family business because you're going to need your partners or your family support for it. So keep in mind with that. Two, if you're lucky enough to work with your partner, you have to make sure that, you know, you're not necessarily laying in bed at 10 o'clock at night discussing work and forgetting that is your life partner, because it's easy, you know? I mean, and just to be a little bit vulnerable, you know, Juliet and I were both had single working mothers, and we were broke. I mean, you know, Juliet remembers, like, you know, like, boo-hoo us, but you know, she wasn't able to, you know, go on field trips because, we couldn't afford it. I remember being critically poor with my mom when she was getting her PhD. I mean, we were, you know, like, you know, it was a donated Christmas tree and no Christmas lights. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We made our own ornaments, and I was never hungry. I was always cared for, but we were broke. And we would run out of gas, always worried about running out of gas. But the reason I mentioned that was that set us up for to really feel like, you know, we were hungry to not feel that kind of stress. We were comfortable being risk takers because we were professional athletes and river guides and used to taking on big responsibility. But then all of a sudden we got to a place where we're like, hey, you know, we're figured out how to pay our mortgage. And the next question we need to ask then was, okay, now we need to take a beat and figure out how we can improve our life again. Now we're not a slave to this thing, because it was. It's easy to become a slave. You know, Juliet would like pull out the calendar. She'd be like, all right, you're teaching four courses this month, and you know you only have three on the books. So where's your fourth one? You know, and I was like, we got to do that because we know that generates revenue. And so for the first time in our lives, again, we weren't broke, and. But it's easy to get on the other side, and you haven't taken a vacation. You are taking your business partner for granted, or your business support for granted, right? Your network is for granted. You haven't, you know, and that's why the river trips are so important, and that's why we create a lot of internal rituals in our family where we are working at 100 miles an hour, and then we turn off. Click, you know, we have a sauna, we have an ice bath. You know, we try to play, we put phones in drawers, and so that there is, while owning your own business is a 24/7 endeavor, it never stops. You know, we're really comfortable with that and gotten comfortable with that, comma, you know, you also have to have pieces in place so it doesn't rule you, it used to rule it.
Well, I want to go back to kind of the beginnings of you know, when you started San Francisco CrossFit and your practice within the gym, because, you know, for me, when I got out, and I vividly remember the conversation, you know, when you're like, look, Danny, you'll make more money, you'll see your family more, and you'll be happier, and you'll be able to affect the military more on the outside than in, you know, and
right. I mean, right. I'm like, no, bro, unicorns, rainbows every day. Like, yeah. You have no idea.
I think that was like totally it. It was just, you know, and, it resonated with me when you said that, and it's something that I really was unsure of what to do. And I remember, you know, back in the parking lot of dreams, back when you guys had the gym in a parking lot, you had this little Connex box that you had your table in that was barely big enough for like anybody to even move around. And I remember thinking, like, dang, like if people are gonna come see somebody in a setting like this, you know, in this little Connex box, like
it was a steer.
You can make it work, man. I mean, like anywhere. So bring me back to that. Cause you started your gym while you were in PT school, right?
Yeah. You know, I appreciate that we're talking to physios here, which is so great, and physio students. You know, it was after my first year, I think I was back, and I in the fall, I had already discovered CrossFit my first semester of physio school, and then realized that I wanted to, you know, become certified and open a gym, and it was such a nascent movement. I mean, the CrossFit movement, we didn't, you know, there were, when I discovered CrossFit, there are five CrossFits, and we are literally the 21st CrossFit now, and so we've been doing this a long time. And went to my PT school, you know, I went back from break, and you know, I took out an extra student loan. They're like, oh, I see you're taking out a private student loan here. I was like, oh yeah, I just need a little extra money.
Yeah.
You know, and I bought rowing machines with it.
Nice.
And barbells. And but I realized that, you know, physio school was tough, but there was time in there in the mornings and the evenings. And you know, in full transparency, the strength conditioning around CrossFit looked very different then. We offered one class a day. You know, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, it was in the morning, and Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or opposite, Monday, Wednesday, Friday was in the morning, Tuesdays, Thursdays in the evening. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturdays, I taught all the classes. And, you know, what I realized in that moment, you know, taking on a business in physio school really shaped my decision making, and it forced me to view my education through a much more practical lens. And so I was really hungry and viewed everything like, how does this work? Because I'm already going to start to do it, right? And at that time, I didn't have any machinations of, of opening my own PT clinic yet. I mean, I was still realized that I needed to go study and be underneath someone and see some surgeries and some complicated cases and have a little mentorship. But it really did. When I wrote up my business plan in my third year with our dean, as part of that communications class, I was literally just, writing out the plan for the business I had already started. I was already there and living. So I was thinking very much about these problems in physio school with the idea, and someone even said this early on, and I think I've repeated it to the physio schools where I've talked, but even if you're working in a big office or a big hospital, you're still developing your own book of business. People are going to ask you, you're taking care of your, slate of patients, right? You're consulting with people and their families. And, so you already have this little mini business within the business, right? Going to get your hair cut. You go get your hair cut by a certain person, so that really got me spun up in terms of really focusing my attention. And then, I went and worked for a pop tea, which is mixed, I think, a little bit. But it was a guy who I thought was doing really good practice, and his physios. I mean, he was in a different office, but the physios worked there were, all a Maitland Australian, physical therapists. They were, they taught for MAPS. They were just really, really great manual badasses, and were all engaged in the business of physio. It just turned out that our clinic was attached to this sports, really sort of fancy sports orthopedic clinic, and we had full autonomy, and there was no weirdness there. But, the 1 year, I saw how much revenue I generated for them, and I made $380,000 for that clinic, and I got to a place where I was bringing in over 50%. Of my own clients. People were coming to the clinic to see me, and because of, I was making $70,000, and they were coming, people were, so I was generating 50% of my own leads, and I was referring a ton of people for orthopedic surgery. And I literally was like, wow, what's going on here? And it turned out it wasn't the greatest situation to be in, because sometimes these things aren't like that, maniac surgeons and stuff aside. And I realized that all I needed to do was put a table down in my office and put my money where my mouth was. Because I'll tell you, when you are a physio working for someone, you don't see what needs to be done, and you can't appreciate how your crappy sort of employee behavior is viewed. And whether it's, I'm just like, I don't mean to be like that everyone is always snide or not doing their best, but when you're an owner, you have a very different set of responsibilities than when you just get to show up for work and wear your clothes and see your patients and go home, and people are very, very quick to point fingers and bitch and kvetch. And I think, and what they say in the military, like that's the right of the infantry soldiers to complain,
Yeah.
But and when you're in leadership, it's just, you don't get that luxury. Your job is to be able to let the infantry complain, and still you have to do it. But what I'm always down with is I'm putting your money where your mouth is. And so if you think you can do it better, go do it better. And I thought I could do it better. And the only way, or I thought I could do it in a way that made more sense for me. And that meant I needed to put up my own shingle, get my own table, and then go ahead and prove to myself what I thought I knew, which was, hey, I can run a clinic in a better way that makes more sense to me and respects my time more efficiently and respects my ability to go out into the community and generate leads and generate relationships, because that's really what this is about, serving the community. That is what this is about. This is not dentistry. This is, people, have complex musculoskeletal problems from their kids all the way up to, Parkinson's to, people in their hundreds and chronic pain in the middle. And there's a lot of people who need consulting with around, actualizing, helping, there's some notion, I think, in physio that, like we've got the answers or, this is the way it's like, you are a consultant to help people manage what's going on in their lives musculoskeletally, right? And that means in training and lifestyle and you know, in even the conversations around the biopsychosocial aspects of surgery, you're there. So, you know, really that idea of serving a community meant that I was out there having lots and lots of conversations with people, and that turned out to generate lots of leads and lots of, you know, and then I didn't have a bad set of hands and people got better, you know, fast, and I helped them with their goals, and that turned out to be a good business model.
So what was it like early on with like the way you structured your schedule with teaching still? Like, did you limit yourself to a certain amount of people per day, or was it, man, at the beginning, I'm just going to see as many people as I could? How did you structure that?
Well, you know, to complicate things, I had a child in my first year of PT school.
Right.
So I had a baby.
Let's make it harder.
Yeah, that's right. And then I had when I was working for that physician, working with that at that clinic, I had a baby born in the NICU. You know, Caroline was born a little prematurely.
Right.
And so I spent 3 weeks in the NICU, and that really, you know, got, you know, clarified things for me even more, you know, that, you know, just sort of the implications of that. And, you know, my wife was an attorney. Juliet was a full-time attorney. And one of the things that I will say was very nice about the way it unfolded for us is that Juliet was a lawyer. I was a full-time employed either student or physio. And then I had another job, and that was the gym. And when I was still working for this physio at this physio clinic, I still – you know, then we had a lot. I mean, I had a thriving gym with like, you know, 200 members, you know, during that. So I was moonlighting, you know, at my dream job while I held down a full job and Juliet had a job. Then when I transitioned over to the clinic, I still already had the gym. So, you know, what I'm saying is that it was nice to have Juliet's support.
Right.
It was nice to have the gym. So I didn't ever have to make a move where I jumped all in and was like, had to make bad decisions. I always was in a situation where I could make good decisions and long-term decisions because I'd never had a cash flow problem. Does that make sense?
Well, you told me one time too, you know, multiple revenue streams is such an important thing, to have, and that I believe the number was 7 is what you,
that's
me.
The like, dream.
So, yeah. You're like, you want to shoot for 7 revenue streams. And I was like, damn, okay. I got some work to do.
Right. Just so that you like, you know, you're creating an ecosystem.
Sure.
And, you know, and then in that ecosystem, you know, the really thing is like your time. So, you know, what we had structured it, you know, for our children stuff where we had a nanny a couple times a week. I had the girl twice a week, full time, you know, when all this was going on. And oftentimes I would get up at 4:30 and coach, be home. By the time Juliet went to work, we'd do the baby handoff. And then I'd go back and coach in the evening. Right. When Juliet got home,
yeah.
You know, so I was coaching on the bookends of the day. And then, you know, a lot of times, you know, what I would do is I would see 10 patients a day. So I would like Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, Friday or 3 days a week. So I was seeing probably most patient days between 30 and 40 a week.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I it was gristly. And some days I would see 12 yeah. patients in a row. I'd work a 12-hour day. And those yeah. were 1-hour blocks. And, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I'd be like stuffing bar. I like, just got to write this note. And like, you know, forcing some kind of protein shake down my throat.
Well, you guys had that Portageon right next to it. So it didn't take too much time to go to the restroom.
That was just a little respect. That was the Taj Mahal of porta potties.
It had a nice plant in it for sure.
Plants, dude, we had bamboo and yeah. lights and plants. And literally we had all of the sanitation engineers who came to clean it. We're like, this is the nicest porta potty we've ever seen. I was like, damn right. Damn right. Yeah, I think on my resume next to Eagle Scout, it says like owned a porta potty for 9 years, right? Or 8 years. I mean, it was just, you know, so, you know, the key is, I think it's easy to, you know, the world has changed a little bit on social media. You like, we got away with the fact that YouTube was very early. You know, people were used to seeing shaky iPhone videos and stuff. And now we're seeing that the world has evolved. Like I can't pull out my iPhone and make crappy content anymore, shaky content on the spot. The content's the same, but the production has to be a little bit better and we have to subtitle and, you know, but it did prove the point and continues to prove the point that people are there for the experience and for the outcome. And yes, we had a few people like, you know, walk around and be like, this is it. Like, this is where I'm training, you know, and you know, we were underneath the Golden Gate Bridge and, you know, it was still deluxe. And I had the inside of the Connex box had nice, you know, wood laminate floors and it was painted well. But, You know, it was not Shishi, but people, what people got was, you know, an hour of my undivided attention and care and work and a plan. And that's why they came back. It wasn't the place. And I think that's, it's easy to get caught into the trap of, I need my own, you know, perfect place. I have to have all of these conditions first. And I hear that all the time. You know, I was just counseling another young physio coach about, you know, his expertise. And, he, you know, he has this idea around teaching movements. And I was like, look, you just need to start, you know, and get a subscription base. And if you think you're nailing it down, go nail it. And the first thing that person did was go out into the world and say, you know, and social media, say, I need a, you know, who's my business developer, social media. Like, he'd already hired someone to do the job he should be doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he had already missed the point. The point is, the thing that you're doing is the thing you need to be doing. So if you're seeing patients, the most important thing you can do is seeing patients. You have that, you worked for that guy who said, you know, how do we get paid, you know, when we see patients?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's easy. You can always improve the environment, but the most important thing is to get people into the door so they can see you and you can work with them and for them. And that's that, you know, that experience of the fact that it was so rough and tumble in the beginning really clarified the importance of what was important, not necessarily having someone at the front office, but for me to be able to schedule effectively with my own, you know, run my own book, and then, you know, really deliver on the pact that I had made with them. You spend an hour of time with me and we will together work through whatever it is you want to work through.
Well, I, when I saw the, you know, the setup that you had and me coming from the military, I mean, I've treated people in the grass, in tents, you know, back of trucks. You know, I found this like kind of really just, you know, mediocre office space in a gym in Atlanta and set up shop there. And I didn't think twice about like that would be a deterrent to people. But I definitely, you know what, I had practitioners ask me, they're like, how do people come see you in this little space? Like it's, you know, it's not like class A office space. And I think what people just take for granted is just how rare it is to get what you're talking about, this undivided attention of a medical provider and to actually be listened to. It's such a rare thing. And it's also very, it's draining, you know, for you, God, for you to see 10 to 12 people doing that, I'd imagine by the end, you know, the first few, you probably were way more interested in,
no,
in listening.
No, that's nonsense. Dude, I was the same guy through the, I just, you know, there was a time where I went through some blood pain. You really bring a good point. You know, that was a grind on those days, but then it wasn't like every single day. But there was a time where I went through a blood panel and I was talking to the interventional nutritionist about the results, you know, and she was like, so it says here you drink 1 to 2 cups of coffee a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's no hyphen. And then there's a big long pause and she's like, what? And I was like, well, it was 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4. And I felt like 12 more closely approximated how much coffee I was actually drinking. And she's like, are you serious? And I was like, well, I started coaching this morning at 4, you know, I got up at 4:30, started coaching 5:30. You know, I have two babies, you know, I have this business, I have all these other coaches, and that's 3 20-ounce Americanos from Starbucks. You know, that's 12 cups of coffee. And she was like, geez, what the crap? Like, and I was like, dude, how do you think I'm getting it done? You know, and you can tell there's definitely a time on the old videos where I am skinny and my hair is falling out. And I am at the limits physically. And I was flying back and forth and, you know, and doing stuff like, you know, this really unique world came up, you know, that Greg Glassman set up for us, where he got people really interested in things like deadlifting and, you know, and it was just such a diagnostic. And, but I was teaching a lot, you know, and, I would get back, you know, Sunday at like 11 o'clock at night or 1 in the morning, you know, and I would go sleep in my gym on my table and then coach on Monday morning at 6 a.m. And, you know, just like sleep on my treatment table and then, you know, and there was definitely, that was unsustainable. And I think, you know, the big deterrent for a lot of physios starting their own practice is that you are going to be thin. Like I didn't hang out with my friends. I didn't, you know, I got this thing started and I was willing to just eat a whole lot. I don't know if I could do it again. I don't think I have the physical tolerance to do that again and still train and coach and deliver. But, you know, those long, long days was really one of the reasons that we started Mobility Wad. You know, I was like, hey, look, I need to create another way to communicate so that I can give more information out and can create a database so that I don't have to cover some of these things in this really valuable time that we're spending together. You know what I mean? And if I have only have an hour, especially in those first few meetings, to really understand the nuances of the environment and what's going on, and help people reframe what's happening with them from a musculoskeletal way in a different and give them something to work on and try to shift that low self control, you know, I needed an additional resource in there. And that, you know, because I couldn't see people three times a week and it's too expensive and no one has that time. You know, so that was why I was coming home and I was like, Juliet, like, there's some basics that people need to know and they don't know. And that was why we started making the videos in the first place, so that I could get people up to a level so that we could actually get to the real conversation, not to the conversation about the conversation. You know, like, what do you mean? Like, your quads, you don't know how to do any of this? You know what I mean? You, like, we can't start from scratch. It's going to take us too long. So if we started, you know, bookmarking some, you know, and capturing some content in a video format, and then that was really so that I could get people spun up, so when they saw me, they had a base understanding of what was going on.
Well, it's, and I've always, you know, wondered this. In fact, the Mobility Wad is something that the business of Mobility Wad, right, at this point, did it start with the idea of, hey, we can turn this into a business, or did it start just 100% organically where you thought, yeah, this is what I need to do for my patients, and then it kind of grew into, holy crap, this is picking up a lot of steam, maybe this could be a business?
Oh, we never saw it as – it was never a business. It was, you know, it was advertising. It was a way of serving the gym members, of right. serving – you know, I started teaching this year marks the 10-year anniversary of teaching – the 101 course. So we've been teaching a course on human performance for 10 years now. And that, you know, and Mobility Wad started in 2010. So, you know, we had already been out there and taught hundreds of courses and thousands of athletes before Mobility Wad started. But it got to the place where I was like, hey, we need to do a better job of supporting the coaches with information. This video format seems like I can get a lot of information now. Cause you know, we had a blog, San Francisco CrossFit had a blog, for a long time, that was early on in the blogosphere. It was Blogspot. And I think if you actually go out to, it's like sanfranciscocrossfit.blogspot.com. It still exists in the world. You can see the nascent and developing and emergent voices of the gym and of my voice and teaching. But every blog post took a couple hours to write. You know, just it takes forever to write a big article and support it with pictures and subsequently. You know, in a 6-minute video, I can, you know, contribute and communicate a lot of information that it would take me several hours. So I was able to basically, you know, take a quantum leap ahead in my ability to communicate what I was seeing and thinking. And we were really transparent because we needed people. One of the things we recognized was that the current physio model was so reactive and that we had to shift our thinking around where we were delivering care. And I think this is where, you know, the first time we sort of, you know, struck the hornet's nest a little bit was getting people to realize that a lot of what I was doing is non-skilled care and needed to be done in the gym setting and a lot earlier in someone's, you know, physical experience than it was when they were late and hot. And because we saw such large numbers of athletes moving, our pattern recognition went through the roof. And so we could really connect the dots because we saw someone with no pain in the shoulder, but these compensations. Then one day they show up and we see them, they have shoulder pain. And we're like, ah, your shoulder hurts. And notice that you've been swinging around like a crazy douchebag with your internally, you know, bent elbows. And we're like, ah. So, you know, so it looks like, you know, we were engaged in some wizardry, but we really had this gigantic laboratory going. And realizing that we needed to empower and shift the burden of when we were delivering this care. And I think we have a type one error in the physical therapy. If our job is part of our job is prevention, or if actualization, right, of really getting people to the place where they can express themselves in the world the way they want to, right? We can't wait until something is terribly wrong before we do that. And that is what the entire physio model was predicated on and continues to be predicated on. And so you know, and for people to say that we can't impact upstream, you know, it's irresponsible. It's irrelevant. If we could manage all of the biopsychosocial components and get people moving correctly, then we would just really only see pathology and injury. We'd see genetic deformities and abnormalities. We'd see, you know, problems in the expression of the genome around collagen. We'd see accidents. And then, you know, but 90% of what we would do as physios would probably evaporate. You know, it really would, because, you know, I think the human being is so robust. You know, we would still herniate discs and things, but it would be a very different situation. So, you know, I think we all need to conceptualize where our job is and what that looks like. And it turns out, because I was a coach and lived in that world, that was the lens through which I viewed it. And I realized also that if I was coaching, you know, I coached about 9 to 12 hours a week, you know, in classes and then private coaches on top of that. So I saw patients and coached, is that, man, it was a lot easier to have, you know, lots and lots and lots of little one-on-one interactions when people were still out of they didn't have pain, they didn't have swelling, they didn't have dysfunction, right? They just had incomplete mechanics, or they were new, or, you know what I mean? They were learning something. I mean, that was the place where I could have the conversations ultimately that I would be having if you were injured, you know?
Well, you bring up the idea of reaching more people, right? And you being able to do that in the gym and seeing more people at once and movement repetitions. And now with social media and the internet and the ability to reach people to really help them, you know, the potential is really there. So for you, you own a brick and mortar business and you own a digital business. Which one of those businesses do you feel like is more challenging to actually be successful in?
Well, you know, there would be a time where I would say, Juliet and I would say owning a gym, you know, because at 350 members, plus all the other things that happen, plus the physio practice in there, plus, you know, everyone who's hanging out in there, it's just high touch. You know, there's just a lot of stuff to work on and a lot of needs, as it were. You know, there's just a lot of very special people sometimes, you know, and there's a lot of people in there, you know, and 350, you know, if we're probably at 500 or 600 people, you know, in the course of a month, you know, easily by the time we look at all the people who've come through and the visitors and, you know, easily that number, you know, it's messy being a human. And that takes a lot of kind of time intensive conversations. And if you look at, you know, it's interesting, I read in sort of two fields right now. One is complexity theory, which I'm just obsessed with, because really trying to help to view the human body as a complex theory, right? As a complex system. It's been very useful for me. But also I read a lot about this evolutionary biology, evolution psychology, right? And so I'm reading, you know, Harari's book, Homo Du, which is his follow-up book to Sapiens. And I highly recommend it. But, you know, if you look at, you know, successful primates, they spend a lot of time not fighting, but curating relationships. And that's exhausting. And it's exhausting as a client or as a physio, because you really are curating a relationship, because that patient client interaction, you know, is so vital and in the heart of what we do. And, you know, now, magnify that same sort of output into making sure my coaches are taken care of, making sure our office staff is sorted, making sure that, you know, that there's just a lot of input. So there's that one piece, and that's sort of emotionally exhausting, you know, and something I sometimes fantasize about not having. And then the other hand, you know, we see that our brick and mortar place keeps us rooted in reality, because we're solving the problems and seeing, you know, it hasn't become theoretical anymore. You know, it's the reality of running a gym and running a business, which really clarifies and streamlines your thinking. So it continues to shape. You know, it'd be great if, you know, a la Maitland, I could see a patient 3 to 5 times a week. That'd be great, you know, but that doesn't work ever. There's no physio model in the history of the world. You know, you remember that there's oftentimes one soldier for five or one physical therapist for 5,000 soldiers.
Right.
Like it doesn't matter how good that physio is. The model is broken. So, you know, on the one hand, it's really great that we keep our, you know, I'm still learning. I'm still practicing. The gym is still my lab. You know, I actually have classes on the schedule that anyone can take, but they're called Kelly's Performance Lab, where literally I just experiment on people. you know, and things that I'm working on, concepts in the context of strength conditioning. And then on the other hand, you know, the online business is a beast. It is a machine. It's a hungry beast. We have really smart people engaged. We are always engaged in conversations about better practice and generating content and curating content and communicating content. And that is, you know, an entire, its own monstrosity of a responsibility,
right?
You know, even just from the customer service, you know? And, so, you know, it's great that we have both going. And again, it's a testament, I think, to Juliet and her management skills and organization skills that the whole thing just doesn't implode. But, you know, on the one hand, it's really simple and elegant because, you know, there's just fewer people involved and we can be faster with the online business and we can reach more people and we can scale things and, you know, and respect our time and work remotely. On the other hand, you know, oh, my God, some, you know, we fantasize about getting to a day where we turn social media off. And yeah. walk away, and literally just walk away, and they're like, "What happened to Kelly Starrett? We don't know." But I saw some guy with a beard doing squats in the woods, you know. And so, you know, I think what's interesting is that it's still really fun, and I don't think we've topped out or nailed it, and we're getting better about communicating and you know the resources, and we continue to see massive amounts of opportunity and problems, and it's crowded, you know, and we get ripped off and we have to defend our trademarks and, you know, it's a business first and foremost. So, you know, I think we, because it's so high human touch, what we do, I mean, I just sometimes wish I manufactured widgets, you know, like I should just make fidget spinners and call it good. It turns out fidget spinners still, you still have to ship them and manage them and organize, and you have to have, you know, manage the people who are managing them. And you know, I think business always has universalities in there. You know, there are universalisms in those pieces. And so at some point you better become good at business because that's the thing, you know, and it doesn't necessarily scale infinitely, but, you know, hopefully you can get back to a place where you can not fall into the trap that we start off with, which is you're not seeing your family. Cause it is all about, you know, you creating a life of meaning for yourself, hopefully doing something that you really like, or at least something that you're good at.
Well, absolutely. And I think you nail on the head too with just the point of people very rarely reinvest in their business knowledge. And yet as physios, I think it's very normal for us to think, oh, you know, yeah, absolutely, I'm going to, you know, pay however much money for this continuing ed course and it's going to improve my skill set. But, you know, I know a lot of good physical therapists that will never have a very successful practice because they're not good at management. They're not good at business. They're not good at marketing themselves. They don't know how to network. You know? So
that's right. Or they don't have the partnerships to do that because it's not their skill set. Right. At least I know that none of this could work without Juliet. So literally Juliet, like you asked me what my partner is for the day. I'm like, make sure Juliet is sorted out. Cause if Juliet has the resources and is feeling cared for, then my business is not going to fail.
And there's a book called Rocket Fuel that talks about this concept of a visionary and implementer, and it's really interesting because for you guys, that's you too. You're married and you just have different skill sets, but the two together creates a really profound potential for business success. And so what you're alluding to, I believe, is primarily like understand what you're good at and understand what you need to. You know, replace, whether that be somebody else or a partner or whatever, but don't try to replace, don't try to partner with somebody that's just like you. That's a terrible idea.
Well, you haven't solved another problem. I mean, if we apply that thinking to anywhere else, you know,
right.
Like it doesn't work. You have a team, you know, you don't have two quarterbacks,
yeah.
You know? And I mean, it's a dumb analogy, but it's the same. And I, you know, I really think, you know, you hit it right on the head. And the other thing I think that is tricky is that, you know, when you are seeing a whole lot of patients in the day, there is not a whole lot of extra time to, like, you know, I mean, like, you're scrambling around to get paid and to be reimbursed and to, you know, and to try to improve your skill set. And theoretically, because you're a physical therapist, you exercise or have a movement practice too, right? You don't just talk about it, but you actually, you know, do Pilates or yoga or run or something, you know. And, you know, I think it's really difficult to get ahead of that curve. But, you know, I was talking with Greg Cook a long time ago, and we were talking about his first book, you know, and he's like, you know, people, he said, people come up and ask me, they're like, hey, do you think I should write a book? And he's like, if you're not already writing it, don't ask me that question. Yeah. You know, he's like, because I was a single dad, you know, writing chapters for the book that I had in my head on my washing machine at 12 o'clock at night, wow, because that was the only time I could. And it really does come down to will at some point. I mean, you know, where you're going to have to realize that you can lead a better life and have a better business, but you know, you better have a plan, it doesn't have to be fancy. You just need to do things like answer the phone. Anyone who cancels MobilityWOD membership and calls the number gets my cell phone and I answer the phone. Wow. You know, like I walked in the other day yesterday to the gym and pulled out the vacuum, and because everyone else is busy and coaching and I'm vacuuming up the rope hair, and I'm not that I'm, you know, ever too good for that, but you do what needs to be done, and that's all of it until you can find a partner or bring a partner on or someone who can, you know, who's better at it than you are. And in the meantime, it may just be you. I mean, we have plenty of friends who like you, who, you know, you do it by yourself for a while. You make it work, and then your family realizes, you know, like, you know, Ashley's a ninja and she can do it better than you can.
Oh, she's way smarter than me. I mean, I think that's a no brainer, right? I mean, and I'm very fortunate too, because just, you know, you have a Juliet and I have an Ashley, and she definitely runs things. She talks in terms of standard operating procedures, right? I talk in terms of ideas and, you know, philosophies and like stuff like that, and that would never work if it wasn't for organization from somebody else.
Well, and I want to be clear that you and I aren't de-sexifying that stuff. Like Juliet says, all right, here's our long-term plan, here's how we're gonna get this done, here's the content you need to produce, and I know Ashley does the same. And you know, it's not, it's just as sexy, you know, I do look forward to the day where, you know, I think Juliet may run for government one day, and I just can't wait to be the first man. I want to hold teas.
That'd be so awesome. And like, I want to, like, guys, be great.
I just want to staple papers for her and lift stuff and let her do all of the, you know, the public BS. But, you know, the main thing is, once again, though, you know, however you work this out, you've got to create and envision a life that where you, like, what is your goal? No, your goal is to be able to travel, and, you know, like, one of our goals was to be able to go teach in another country and be able to bring my kids, and we're there. And I'm not saying we're all going to do that,
right?
But you can still create, you know, there are, I think, still untapped in terms of excellent physical therapists developing long-term relationships with people. Like, there's never going to be too many of us, you know, and there's so many talented people there. We just have to figure out a way where you can be reimbursed in a way that you're not getting $30 for an hour session, you know, and your time is better reflected in, you know, in doing something else. You should be able to pay off your student loan debt, you know, and save for the future and not work 70 hours a week for someone else.
Right. Man, it's so spot on. This is great. You know, I knew this would be a really good conversation. I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people, and hopefully they can take some of the, you know, lessons learned from what you've done and in the, you know, the years of your experience in business and multiple kinds of business and really, you know, it pay forward. And I think the overall message is what you keep saying, man, like, why are you doing this stuff? Like, what does it come back to? And being able to keep that stuff in perspective, it's very motivating, but it also keeps you grounded so that you don't spin out of control no one wants to finish by themselves, right? Like,
that's right. And you can't burn out. You can't afford to burn out. And I saw that burnout. I saw what it looked like, you know, and I was like, ooh, like, you know, I'm not having it. I got to a place where I wasn't having any fun.
Right.
You know, and remember why, you know, I always say, remember why you went to physio school? People are like, 'cause I want to help people. I'm like, bullshit. That's not what it is. It's 'cause you are a nerd and you like the work.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it's about. Like, I like the work. I like the tooling. I like the coaching. I like the hands-on. I like the conversations about it. I love the work. And so you just got to keep in a place where you can then just love the work, comma, and not be underpaid or undervalued for that experience.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Kelly, you know, thanks so much for your time. I mean, I know people they should know who you are. I'm sure if they, you know, if they don't, www.mobilitywad.com is the easiest place to find them. Mobility Wad on their social media handles. Instagram's awesome. You know, you guys are active on Twitter as well. So if people want to reach out to you, they can find you there. Kelly, you know, we really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. Any parting words you want to give, you know, PT, future and or current entrepreneurs out there about the future of, you know, what they should be doing in business?
Well, I think that the physio entrepreneur is in a unique place to really, instead of, you know, sort of carve out your own island, like what I think what we used to do, you know, hey, okay, I'm gonna have this independent practice that's slightly different than everyone else. I think we can really shape public expectation of what good care is. And it's not that the physios working in these traditional clinics aren't giving good care, but the clinic, it may not be, or the hospital may not be the best place to deliver that. And I think we can really give this voice where we can give, spend more time with people and play a much longer game where that conversation is about all the aspects of someone's physical carriage.
That's perfect. You guys heard here, Dr. Kelly Storrett, he's the man, one of my favorite people, and so awesome to talk to him about business and where they've been. Hope you guys learned a lot from this one. So guys, it's a PT entrepreneur. Hit us up if you have any questions. Shoot me an email. You got my direct email. That's right. I give it out, and I do answer that stuff. So if you have a question, I love to talk business, and I'd love to connect with you. So guys, thanks so much for listening, and take care.